Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's third quarter 2015 earnings conference call. With us this morning from Alpek, we have Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, Head of Investor Relations, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation. The plan for today is to provide an overview of the latest industry developments as well as third quarter results and open up for a Q&A session afterwards. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Eduardo Escalante.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. The third quarter was marked by a sudden shift in crude oil and feedstock prices, mainly paraxylene. The average Brent price went down from $62 per barrel in June to $47 per barrel in September, and the U.S. paraxylene contract price was 19% lower during the same period, after posting consistent month-to-month improvement throughout the first half of the year. As you know, a downward price environment such as this is unfavorable for our industry. Yet, Alpek's underlying performance was resilient to the temporary distortions caused by this situation. Adjusting for inventory valuation, it is important to note that third quarter consolidated EBITDA was higher both year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter as favorable industry developments continue supporting solid results. The recent increase to the North America PTA price formula, as well as polypropylene and EPS margin expansion, have been fundamental drivers behind this year's better-than-expected results. We are particularly excited by record performance at our polypropylene business. More importantly, we believe that profitability is sustainable beyond 2015 as a result of tight polypropylene supply, a strong demand, and falling feedstock costs driven by propane-based production in North America. Other encouraging industry developments include the recent announcements by the U.S. Department of Commerce regarding the PET anti-dumping case and PTA capacity shutdowns in China. According to publicly available information, at least 8 million tons per year of Chinese PTA capacity associated with the plant shutdowns that we have mentioned in previous quarters remain offline. Even though reference Asian PTA margins have not improved correspondingly, we do believe that rationalization represents an important step in the right direction for a gradual recovery in the global polyester industry. Regarding the PET anti-dumping case, between August and October, the U.S. Department of Commerce issued preliminary affirmative determinations related to the anti-dumping and countervailing duty investigations on packaging-grade PET resin. As a result, cash deposits are now being required on imports from certain countries for the first time since the petitions were filed in March. This represents an important milestone for domestic PET producers to recover market share from unfairly traded imports into the United States. Final determinations from the U.S. International Trade Commission and the U.S. Department of Commerce are scheduled in the first half of 2016. We are also highly motivated by the prospects of our strategic CAPEX program. Let me begin with an update on the Altamira Power Cogeneration Plant, which is on track for construction to begin before year-end, following an exhaustive technical review that resulted in a more profitable setup. The facility's capacity was increased to 350 megawatts, up from 300 megawatts, and the initial $400 million investment was reduced to $350 million. Moreover, a startup was extended a few months from late 2017 to the first half of 2018. Incremental EBITDA is estimated to be approximately $90 million per year as a result of the plant's larger scale and state-of-the-art technology. We are also pleased to announce three new initiatives we decided to undertake this quarter, two of which are intended to reinforce our operating and commercial EPS platform in the Americas. First, we will invest an estimated $30 million in a 75,000 tons per year EPS capacity expansion project at our Altamira site in Mexico to better serve our growing customer base in North America. A startup of this project is expected before year-end 2017. Second, we signed an agreement with BASF to acquire its 20,000 tons per year EPS plant in Concon, Chile, complementing our recently integrated EPS assets in South America. Closing of the transaction is expected by early 2016. Financial terms of the agreement were not disclosed. Both of these initiatives mark yet another significant milestone in the transformation process of our EPS business, which is evolving from a 165,000 tons per year joint venture operating just one plant in Mexico to a 325,000 tons per year wholly owned subsidiary operating production facilities in Mexico, Brazil, Chile, and Argentina. The third new initiative complements our polyester segment with a 110,000 tons per year polyester fiber capacity expansion. We will invest an estimated $30 million in our Pearl River plant to meet growing customer demand. This project leverages existing on-site infrastructure, reducing capital requirements and accelerating a startup, which is expected before year-end 2016. Alpek installed polyester fiber capacity will grow by approximately 40% upon completion. Before moving on to Alpek's third quarter financial results, it is important to keep in mind the downward oil and feedstock price trend observed between July and September. This is particularly important for sequential comparisons, as the previous quarter benefited from a strong price environment. Consolidated 3Q15 net sales were down 18% year-on-year and 4% quarter-on-quarter, mainly as a result of lower average prices, which are highly correlated to feedstock costs. In contrast, consolidated 3Q15 EBITDA totaled $156 million, up 19% when compared to the third quarter 2014, but 20% lower on a sequential basis due to inventory valuation. The third quarter 2015 was negatively impacted by $26 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge, as opposed to $22 million and $1 million non-cash inventory valuation benefits recognized in 2Q15 and 3Q14, respectively. This was mainly attributable to paraxylene price volatility. Adjusting for inventory valuation in order to assess our business's underlying performance, we get a comparable consolidated EBITDA of $182 million for third quarter 2015, $130 million for third quarter 2014, and $173 million for second quarter 2015. Breaking down by business segment, 3Q15 polyester EBITDA was $79 million. Including a $23 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge due mainly to falling paraxylene prices. Adjusting for inventory valuation, comparable 3Q15 polyester EBITDA was up 18% when compared to third quarter of last year. However, seasonality and an unplanned shutdown in Argentina resulted in a 6% sequential decrease. In addition to the North America PTA price formula increase, polyester EBITDA continued to benefit from the ramp-up of our Cosoleacaque power cogeneration plant. The facility has posted consistent quarterly EBITDA improvement year-to-date. Moving on to plastics and chemicals, once again, this segment benefited from better-than-expected polypropylene and EPS performance. 3Q15 plastics and chemicals EBITDA reached $76 million, including a $3 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge, mainly due to falling propylene prices. Adjusting for inventory valuation, comparable 3Q15 plastics and chemicals EBITDA was up 89% year-on-year and 21% quarter-on-quarter. In particular, polypropylene margins have expanded significantly since the beginning of the year, supported by favorable feedstock and market dynamics in North America. A strong seasonal EPS demand for electronics and appliance packaging also contributed to EBITDA growth in the third quarter. Moving down on the P&L, consolidated majority net income totaled $38 million in the third quarter 2015, 28% higher than that of 3Q14. On a sequential basis, this quarter's $45 million decline in consolidated majority net income was mainly attributable to a $26 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge and a $21 million non-cash foreign exchange loss resulting from the recent devaluation of the Mexican peso. Improvement in operating results has driven the 56% year-to-date growth in consolidated majority net income. Now, I would like to comment briefly on net debt and certain cash flow items. Net debt totaled $656 million at the close of the third quarter, down $59 million year to date as a result of a strong operating cash flow generation. Lower net debt and higher EBITDA reinforce Alpek's strong financial position. Our net debt to EBITDA ratio came down to 1.2 times in 3Q15 compared to 1.7 times in the first quarter. CapEx amounted to $35 million in the third quarter and $150 million year to date. The majority of this year's CapEx has been dedicated to strategic projects such as the EPS operations acquired from BASF, the Corpus Christi PTA and PET plant, and the Huntsman monoethylene glycol tolling agreement. Yet, the accumulated CapEx figure is lower than what we had anticipated in the beginning of 2015 given that our estimations included payments for the Altamira cogeneration plant that have been deferred to 2016. Let me provide a brief update on our key investments as we continue to implement our CAPEX program. The Corpus Christi PTA and PET plant is advancing as planned, with payments being made in accordance with agreed milestones. The expansion work associated with the MEG tolling agreement will most likely be a few months longer than expected. The latest information from Huntsman suggests that a startup will take place in early 2016 rather than 4Q15. We continue to engage Pemex regarding our MEG integration project in Mexico. However, we have no new developments to report since our previous conference call. I would like to wrap up the call with a few comments regarding our 2015 guidance. We feel confident that our $585 million revised full-year EBITDA guidance, even with the $26 million year-to-date net impact from inventory devaluation charges. Building on the $488 million of accumulated EBITDA at the close of the third quarter, we expect the fourth quarter's EBITDA to be higher year-on-year, although potentially lower on a sequential basis, resulting mainly from seasonality and the upcoming polyester plant's scheduled maintenance shutdowns. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to open the call for questions. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Absolutely. And if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll take our first question from Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Eduardo, Hernan. Thanks for the call. My question is regarding your comment about Asian margins. It called my attention that you say that margins have not improved correspondingly to the recent closures. I wonder what's the level of margins that you would think corresponds to these strategies that we've seen, and why do you think they haven't responded? Thanks.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for your question, Vanessa. Yes, there was a significant increase in margins in May of this year after the announcements of some of the shutdowns as well as the accident with Dragon Aromatics. But since then, margins have been pretty much stable the last few months. And they are still below cash costs. I would say it's slightly below, but still below. However, something that is important is that we are hearing more and more comments about companies that are running out of cash and are under severe financial stress in Asia. We think this will reflect in increase shutdowns or significant reductions in operating rates in the near future. In fact, I think a case in point is what happened with Hanwha, which is a large PTA producer in South Korea. They operate a couple of plants, one with a capacity of 1.3 million tons and the other one with a capacity of 700,000 tons. And they went through difficult times since August when they announced a reduction in operating rates to about 80% because of commercial reasons. Then in September, they decided to shut down two of the lines at the largest plant. And in October, in fact, 1 or 2 days ago, they announced the complete shutdown of this plant. And it has been known in the industry that discussions between the management and the union, from these discussions, that they expect the plant to be shut down for at least several weeks. So I think we will continue seeing this. This is an example of what we think will happen with the industry. And we are confident that with these shutdowns, there will come an increase in the reference Asian polyester margin.
Okay, thanks. If I may ask a second question, could you update us on your outlook for the volumes that will come from the Corpus Christi plant? As of now, do you expect to be able to place them in a domestic market, or will you rely on exports for reaching high utilization rates in that plant? Thanks.
Yeah, it really will depend on how the global industry evolves by 2017 and 2018. Today, as you know, North America is long in PTA, so we do export PTA mainly to Europe and South America. So I would say it really will depend on how in particular the Asian situation evolves in the next couple of years. In the case of the project, we do have 400,000 tons per year of integrated PET production, and you have to remember we shut down our oldest facility last year. So we think there will be an opportunity to place some volume in the domestic market, but again, I think exports will continue. Another important variable regarding this topic is it really will depend also on what happens with the PET anti-dumping and countervailing case, which, as we mentioned before, it has evolved positively with the preliminary ruling of the U.S. Department of Commerce to set preliminary countervailing duties in August and preliminary anti-dumping duties in October. So if the final rulings in early 2016 are favorable, that will certainly open up the opportunity to increase the domestic sales of PET. The four countries included in this process send today to the U.S. about 350,000 tons of PET per year, so there is there will be a significant volume as an opportunity for domestic producers.
Excellent, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And next, we'll hear from Felipe Santos with J.P. Morgan.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Just in order to mention that you don't have updates on the plant with PEMEX, but what can we expect from there in terms of a timeline or any kind of decision or any kind of announcement that could come? This meaning that should we see something happening to the end of this year? How the process going? And this would be my first question.
Good morning, Felipe, and thank you for the question. As you know, Pemex went through a significant transformation regarding their legal structure. They created several new companies that they plan to move into being wholly owned subsidiaries of Pemex. Today, Pemex not only has the new structure in place, but they also have named the people responsible of each one of the units. And it is important for a project that the team responsible of the Pemex Etileno, Pemex Ethylene business, is already in place. And we have been able to re-engage with them in the discussions to move forward with this project. That is the good news. I think after several months of uncertainty regarding who was going to push this project in Pemex organization, we are clear now regarding that. The new team is very much interested. The new Pemex team is very much interested in moving forward with the project, which we think is also very positive. Now, there is an additional hurdle that we were working before, and we continue working now with the new team, which is Pemex is going through a significant restraint in terms of availability of funds to invest in new projects, in particular in petrochemical. So we are working together with them to find ways to overcome this restriction, and we think we'll be able to do so. We are looking at some Pemex assets that hopefully Pemex can contribute to the project, to the new OEMEG plant, so they will not have to contribute cash as for the equity portion of the project, but some of those assets instead. And on the project side, that will allow us to lower the invested amounts. So again, we had a significant delay these past few months because of the reasons that I mentioned before, but we are confident that with this re-engagement with them, we'll be able to move forward. I don't know if we are going to have something concrete to make an announcement before the end of the year, but we are certainly working at a fast pace, much faster than in the past today.
Thank you. So, sorry. So this means that the old idea of the concept that we had for this project is no longer valid. It would be looking like much more like a joint venture with an assets, and you doing the capex to update the assets and producing the raw material and everything else that you need from existing plants of Pemex. Is that correct?
No. What we are looking at is for Pemex to contribute some of the assets to incorporate to the project. We have not changed the scope of the project of building a new OEMEG plant. That is still in the table, and that's still the main purpose of the project. But there are some auxiliary assets that Pemex may contribute to the project. Let me give you an example. The oxygen plant. A lot of oxygen is needed to produce ethylene oxide in order to supply to the MEG plant. So we are looking at the oxygen plant, a Pemex oxygen plant, to be contributed to the project. So we are reviewing the scope in that sense. I think it's too early to make a clear a statement on what assets will be contributed and how that will affect the project. We'll have that in a few months after we have the valuation of those assets.
Understood. So we should have some new beginning of the next year if we're going to see an advancement of the project or not.
That is correct.
Okay, that's perfect. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And moving on, we'll hear from Lillian Stark with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, thank you for taking my question and congratulations on the results. Just to follow up on that same question on the MEG project with Pemex, how have the economics of this project changed over the past? I mean, you started looking at this project about a year ago, even longer than that. How have the economics changed under the current conditions? And what are you sort of thinking about when assessing the return?
Hello, Lillian. Thank you. Thanks for your question. The economics have certainly changed. This project looks different when you consider an environment with an oil price of $110 per barrel versus an environment of $55 per barrel. The MEG market prices are set globally by NAFTA-based producers. So the costs of the marginal producers are really based on those oil reference prices. With the decline in oil prices, what has happened is that the margin that for MEG has decreased, and I have to say has decreased significantly, but it is still a profitable project. I'm not sure we will go on if we forecasted a $45-$48 per barrel oil price projection. But if you consider that prices should increase a little bit to, I don't know, $60 to $70 per barrel in the long term, the project is still quite profitable. One significant advantage why this project is still good is because it does take advantage of Pemex assets. It is not a complete greenfield. We will build a new OEMEG plant, but regarding the cracker, the ethylene cracker, which is the largest part of the investment, we will not build a new cracker. We would just invest in the bottlenecking and increasing the capacity of the Morelos cracker. So that is what makes this project still a very good project for the future, but certainly it has been affected by the decrease in oil price.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much for the response.
You're welcome.
And next, we'll hear from Pedro Medeiros with Citigroup.
Okay. Good morning, Eduardo and Renan. Thank you for the call. Two quick questions here. The first one is to comment on the expansion you announced on PTA capacity in Pearl River, talking about a project to increment capacity by 110,000 tons of polyester fiber. Can you comment a bit on the rationale behind taking this opportunity now? How much of that is related to your forecast of ethylene MEG prices or local market characteristics, and if you don't mind to give a guidance on potential investment to expand the facility. Second question is also related to the expansion announced on Altamira and the lower capex that you have announced. Is the capex revision fully related to the design of the facility, Or was there any meaningful share of lower cost of raw materials and labor in dollars? In other words, I'm trying to seek some information whether that capex can be revised even further down in the future. And when would you expect to sell power for Altamira?
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Pedro, for your questions. Let me first talk a little bit about the expansion in Pearl River. In this case, the project is to expand our capacity of polyester staple fiber. It is not a PTA capacity expansion. It is just the staple polyester fiber capacity, which we will expand in order to meet growing demand. Of course, with this expansion, we will consume more of our own PTA to supply to this new line. The project we are considering to install a line to produce 110,000 tons of staple fiber, polyester staple fiber. And the rationale behind it is that there is a growing demand in the U.S. for polyester fiber coming not only a little bit from the domestic market, but also coming from the CAFTA, that's CAFTA, C-A-F-T-A, that's the Central America Free Trade Agreement that Central America has with the U.S. There is a significant increase in demand for textile garments from being manufactured in Central America for the U.S. market. So we want to take advantage of this opportunity, and that's why we are increasing the capacity. The 110,000 tons represent an increase of about 40% of Alpek's current polyester fiber capacity. So it is significant, but still we are confident that we'll be able to find a domestic market for it. There are significant imports today of fiber into the U.S. Regarding the date, we expect the project to begin by year end 2016, and the investment is around $30 million. Okay. Moving on to your second question, the cogeneration Altamira project. What we did is we review the whole setup of the plant, and we were able to find some significant opportunities. We changed the technology of the turbines that are going to be used in the plant, and we are considering now to install the new age turbines, which are the latest state-of-the-art equipment that is available in the market. What this allowed us to do was, first of all, to increase the capacity for the facility from 300 megawatts to 350 megawatts. And at the same time, we reduce the estimated capex for the project from $400 million to $350 million. So now having a 350 megawatts and $350 million investment, we were able to reduce the capex per kilowatt hour that we are installing by about 26% to roughly $1,000 per kilowatt hour. So that was a significant saving. We are very happy that we took the time to do a detailed review of the project in order to capture this benefit. We will begin construction before year end 2015. We are pretty much ready to do so. And the plan is to be ready by the second quarter of 2018 with the plant. In a steady state, after the ramp-up, we expect this project to contribute about $90 million in EBITDA to our company. So the project looks very good, very promising, and we are really building up on the experience that we had with our first cogeneration plant in Cosoleacaque. So we think it's a very good second step.
Okay. And Eduardo, if I may, and congratulations for that. If I may just ask like a quick follow-up on Altamira, the $19 million of EBITDA, estimated EBITDA, would that include your internal power consumption?
Yes, it would. It does consider the cost savings for our Altamira facilities in terms of power consumption as well as current steam consumption. Cogeneration will be providing both power and steam to our own facilities as well as power to sell to customers.
Okay. And in terms of power prices behind that assumption, are you based on an existing contract or is an estimated based on performance of Cosoleacaque?
No, really the prices will depend on how the electrical energy market prices evolve in Mexico. But what is very good of this project is this type of cogeneration facility is on the lowest part of the cost curve of power generation in Mexico in the years to come. It has significant advantages in terms of efficiency. Of course, supply of natural gas at North America's natural gas costs provides a significant competitive advantage. And also, the banking and transmission rates that are charged and will be charged by CFE in Mexico to the power cogeneration plants are very attractive because it is considered not only a clean energy, but also it is a co-producing plant, not only a power, but also steam. So that's where the $90 million comes from savings plus selling of power, and with all these considerations that I just mentioned.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for the answers. It was very clear. Okay. Congratulations again.
Thank you very much.
Diego Mendez with Itaú has our next question.
Yes, good morning, Eduardo and Helena. I have two questions as well. The first one is how the volumes in the U.S. Are reacting to the preliminary anti-dumping and countervailing duties on the PET, and if you have any, let's say, updated data on how much imports have decreased from this country since these determinations were issued. And the second question is related to the polypropylene. The spread, as you mentioned in your presentation, is very strong. So what are your expectations going forward? Do you believe there is room for additional margin expansion? And if you are studying any increase in the polypropylene capacity as well? Thank you.
Thank you, Diego, and thanks for your questions. Regarding the import duties and countervailing duties in the U.S. for PET, I think it's too early to tell. I can tell you that we do expect the import volumes coming from the four countries, Canada, China,
India
and Oman, to decrease significantly in the next few months. But really, we still, other than some anecdotal elements that we have seen in the market, it is too early to tell how much the volumes have decreased already. What I can tell you is the imports from these four countries, as I mentioned earlier, were about 350,000 tons per year. If you consider our fair share of those 350,000, we'll be talking about 120,000-130,000 tons of PET, which would be the fair share of Alpek, about 40% of the total volume. So I would say there is a significant opportunity for us to capture that volume. Regarding your second question about polypropylene, we do have a spare capacity in Mexico to produce more polypropylene. We are not running at nearly at capacity, mainly because we do not have enough feedstocks availability, enough propylene availability in Mexico. We buy pretty much all the propylene that is produced in Mexico by Pemex, the only producer. So we have been looking the last few months to increase the propylene supply to our plant via, in the short terms, imports. And on the long term, we're looking at some alternatives to invest and produce our own propylene. So we are not looking at any capacity expansion in the near term, but we are trying to make sure that we increase the operating rate of the plant. Demand is very strong. It is growing. We do expect demand to continue growing at a significant pace in the next few years. Some segments are just exploding. The automotive market in Mexico, as you know, is growing very rapidly in the next few years. Many new facilities, manufacturing facilities, are being built in our country. So we are very optimistic that the margin expansion that we have seen will continue. We'll probably increase a little bit more in the next few months, but we'll continue for the next few years.
Okay, thank you very much. And our third question, if I may, just if you could provide us the additional EBITDA that you expect to come from the 75 tons capacity addition at Altamira's ETS plant.
The project, as you mentioned, is to expand 75,000 tons in Altamira. We are growing the plant from 165,000 tons to 240,000 tons. With this expansion, the facility will become the largest EPS facility outside China, and the fourth largest in the world. So it is a significant step for Alpek. Basically, the market we go to is the North America market. With that plant, we serve not only Mexico but also the U.S. and Canada. Mexico is a very large and growing market for EPS for two reasons. First, EPS is used in Mexico as a thermal insulator in construction, so there is a significant demand from the construction industry. But it is also used, as I mentioned before, it is also used for packaging of electrodomestics in the maquila industry. We have a significant maquila industry in Mexico for exports to the U.S. So all the packaging that is used for those TVs and electric appliances uses EPS. EPS is also very strong in the U.S., mainly for construction. So there is an opportunity to move that volume into those markets, as well as a little bit of exports to Central America. The project will be ready before year end, 2017, and we do expect an increased EBITDA coming from these additional 75,000 tons of about $12 million per year.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Carl Martinez with Interacciones.
Yes, hi, good morning, Hernan, Eduardo. Well, I think my question has already been answered, but it was regarding the anti-dumping case in the U.S. I was wondering, I mean, if everything goes well, and even now with the cash deposits that were implemented, when could you start seeing some real benefits? Could you start seeing them in the next coming quarters or until, I don't know, year end of 2016?
I think we will start seeing those early 2016, and in particular after the definitive rulings come out in February and April of next year.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And next, we'll hear from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. You've talked about how you believe that the margin expansion at the chemical segment should be sustainable. So I just wanted to confirm whether there were any extraordinary gains recognized this quarter from the ongoing restructuring of that business. Thank you.
Thank you, Gilberto, for your question. No, not in this quarter. There is nothing extraordinary this quarter, other than a $3 million non-cash inventory devaluation charge in our plastics and chemicals division. But other than that, there is none other extraordinary item in our results. We did have an extraordinary benefit in the first quarter of 2015. That was $26 million coming from the sale of our polyurethane business in Mexico to BASF. That was reflected in the first quarter's EBITDA. But since then, other than the inventory devaluation that I referred to, there's nothing extraordinary.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Chelsea Consco with TIA Cref has our next question.
Hi, and thank you for the call. I just had a question regarding news headlines that we've seen about the CFO coming out and talking about more significant investment in the future in MEG in particular. I know it's kind of far off into the future maybe, but I'm wondering what the strategic rationale of expanding MEG even further with the projects that you already have in the pipeline and with the Huntsman tolling agreement and the Pemex JV, how self-sufficient will you be in MEG and how much more do you need to be fully self-sufficient?
Sure, Chelsea. Good morning and thanks for your question. Those statements were really referring to the same Pemex project. That was one of the projects included in the significant investments that we mentioned a few weeks ago. The rationale behind it, first of all, that's it regarding MEG. We have Huntsman, we do have Pemex, and that will be enough to cover all our MEG requirements in Alpek. The other projects that we mentioned in long term, what is behind them is the increased availability of feedstocks that we expect in Mexico coming from the investments allowed by the energy reform. Just to give you an example, we think there will be more natural gas and natural gas liquids available in Mexico to be able to backward integrate some of our processes. One that we mentioned before is we would like to integrate backwards in our polypropylene business and build a new propylene plant in Mexico. For that, we do need the increased availability of those feedstocks. But that was the rationale behind those projects. As you mentioned, those projects are still a few years down the road, but still we think there will be significant opportunities coming from the energy reform for us in Mexico.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And next, we'll take a follow-up question from Pedro Mederos with Citigroup.
Okay, thank you. Eduardo, I have a couple of follow-ups. I just wanted to understand, can you give like a bit of color on what's going to be the impact of your planned polyester plant shutdown for the fourth quarter?
Sure. First, let me tell you when those shutdowns are regular scheduled maintenance shutdowns. There is absolutely nothing extraordinary regarding those shutdowns. We take advantage at the end of the year of the seasonality of our the demand of PET, where we usually have a lower demand at the end of the year than we do in the other quarters of the year. So again, those are regular scheduled maintenance shutdown in a couple of plants, both in Mexico and in the U.S. We do not expect, coming just from the shutdowns, not from seasonality, but just from the shutdowns, we do not expect a major volume impact because of the lower demand, and also because we are building a little bit of inventory to cover the period.
Okay, which leads to a follow-up to that, which is trying to understand how comfortable are you with the $585 million guidance for 2015, which look at your year-to-date EBITDA would imply a $97 million for the fourth quarter. So if there's little impact in volumes and other chemical margins are running strong, I'm not sure if you're counting with inventory devaluation on the fourth quarter, but it seems there's significant upside risk to that figure.
First of all, we did not build any inventory adjustment, neither charges nor benefits coming from inventory revaluation or devaluation in our guidance in the 585. So I think it's important to consider that we are maintaining the 585, even though we had a $26 million charge during the third quarter. We decided to maintain the 585 because, first of all, there is the seasonality aspect of the demand during the fourth quarter. Again, we don't think it's going to be that significant, but still there is that effect. And we think even though we are seeing good sales volumes early in the fourth quarter, we decided not to review the guidance. We don't think it is going to be within the 10% threshold. Hopefully, as you mentioned, with an upside risk for the year. Again, we realize we are being conservative with this, but we feel confident not only that we'll be able to achieve it, but to exceed it.
Okay, and thank you. And just one last follow up on CapEx. Originally the agreement with Huntsman was previewing an investment to be fulfilled by the fourth quarter, with the slight delay on the contribution of MEG coming from Huntsman. Is there any change on the investment side?
There's no change on the amount. The amount continues to be $65 million. The construction project was delayed a little bit. Originally, it was scheduled for the end of this year, and now the new startup date is by the first quarter of next year. The only change regarding the CapEx is that the final payment is made when the plant is up and running. So instead of paying this year, the last payments will be early next year.
Okay. Thank you so much.
No more questions.
And that concludes the Q&A session for today. I'll turn the conference back to Hernan Lozano for any additional or closing remarks.
Yes, thank you. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. And please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a great day.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference for today. We thank you for your participation.